Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth, a program where you listeners send me questions on practical spirituality and I answer them on the basis of Swami's message. I am, of course, Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and I begin by offering my most humble pranams at Swami's lotus feet. We've had a number of questions on the show, and personally, it has been delightful to field all of them. And I'm also very grateful to all those who write to me after the show on what they thought about the answer. So let me start this week's show by thanking those who are sending me questions and feedback, and of course, Swami for inspiring us each and every day. If you have a question which you would like me to answer, you can send them to my mail ID, that's prem@radiosai.org. Well, if you missed it, don't worry, I'll repeat it at the end of the show anyway. But let your questions be on practical applications of Swami's message. And though I've answered a few purely philosophical questions, this program is more for questions on practical spirituality. So with those few words, let's head to the program. I have one question for this week, and if time permits, I will read out one classic incident from the life of one of Swami's devotees. But before that, it is time for the quote of the week. Yes, I haven't forgotten that. And the quote is from one of my favorite thinkers, poet, philosopher, educationist, songwriter, and Nobel laureate, Rabindranath Tagore. Like his many crisp quotes, this one too is as profound as it is beautiful. So brief, yet so articulate. And here comes the quote for the week. I quote, "Clouds come floating into my life, no longer to carry rain or usher storm, but to add color to my sunset sky." I repeat that quote. "Clouds come floating into my life, no longer to carry rain or usher storm, but to add color to my sunset sky." What beautiful words. Most of the time, we go through life seeing things happening to us. I found happiness. I was subjected to pain. I am successful. I was defeated. When we go through life this way, there is no way we can escape feeling like the achiever and the victim alternatively. And all of life is lost in going after one and avoiding the other. If we can just step out of this syndrome and look at life like a romantic looking at the evening sky, like Tagore looking at the sunset when he wrote these words probably, wouldn't life be a song? When clouds come into our life, if we can look on without being worried, wondering if they are storm clouds, and without feeling elated expecting rain showers, and if we just look at the clouds and say, they are, and say, oh, they add beauty to my life, imagine how life would be. And that is what Swami wants us to do. Swami would say, give up vyakti tattvam and embrace atma tattvam. One way of looking at this statement is, give up looking at life as an individual and start looking at life from Swami's point of view. Unattached, just as a witness enjoying the whole play. When we are lost in our life, we do find happiness every now and then. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But when we step aside and watch life like a witness, and see pain and pleasure, trouble and triumph as clouds floating past our sky of life, just to add momentary beauty and color to it, we can experience bliss. And Swami would say that each of us are here in search of that bliss, and not mere happiness. Swami would say that we all are ananda pipasi, those thirsting for true bliss. And to become a witness is the way to relish that bliss. So before we move on, permit me, dear listeners, to read that quote for you one more time. And the quote is from Rabindranath Tagore. I quote, "Clouds come floating into my life, no longer to carry rain or usher storm, but to add color to my sunset sky." Coming now to the question of the week. The question is from Sister Sanju. She has actually sent me two questions. I'll be discussing her first question today. And she's been kind enough to send the question in her own voice too. So let us first listen to the question in Sister Sanju's own voice.
Sairam, being a child of his, I have always heard and I am personally convinced that Swami always sees the efforts than the end product. And He is the doer. We are all but mere instruments in His divine play. If in that case, how a person can attribute the failures or not so expected outcomes or outputs to Swami? It is we who have not thought through, not planned well to reach that perfection. I can give a small example which happened in my own life. I was organizing an event with my team. We planned through and prepared well, but due to certain constraints, the execution did not happen as it was planned. We could not do as per the perfection we aimed for. And I was carried away by the disappointment because it was our fault somewhere to achieve the end product we aimed at. But my teammates told me to prepare my mind saying that Swami has planned it in such a way. Now, are we trying to console or cover up saying that Lord willed or Lord had that sankalpa? Is that not our learning? Is it not our responsibility to have made it perfect or proper? Is all failures and setbacks God-willed? How we will be able to attribute our mistakes to Bhagwan?
Thank you, Sister Sanju, for that question. I had spoken on a few occasions about this before, specifically, I think sometime last month, the show which we aired on 2nd of February, there was a question from Sister Shruti, and it was a very interesting question on surrender and how do you know that your efforts are complete and now it is time to wait for the results, and how do you decide whether you need to continue with your efforts or your efforts are complete? If you're interested, you could probably go and listen to that answer, because many of the things which I said there is applicable to your question too. But of course, I will be quoting a few things which I mentioned then for this answer too, but that will come a bit later. Now, to start with, you know, there is a certain paradox in the question itself, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that the question is wrong that you've asked, but there is a certain paradox in the concept itself, and probably I can point that out by referring to the question that you asked. For instance, you started by saying that Swami sees only the efforts, and the very next line you say that Swami is the doer, right? So if Swami is the doer, then why should I be rewarded or appreciated for the effort? Or if you say that Swami sees the effort that we do, then we are the doer of the effort. How can Swami be the doer? So I hope you can see that contradiction inherent in that concept itself when you say that either Swami is the doer or when you say that Swami sees the effort and not the result. Well, one simple way of resolving that is probably to say that stick to anyone. Either think that Swami is the doer and stick to that. Don't be bothered about success or failure. No, the other one is take full responsibility for your effort. Put your best effort. When something goes wrong, blame yourself, correct yourself, and forget the concept that Swami is the doer. But I think, as I said, that's one of the most simple or superficial way of approach. Actually, both these statements, that Swami is the doer, as well as the fact that Swami sees the effort and not the end result, both these statements are true. And I think on different occasions, Swami has mentioned the two. And it is necessary for us to see how both of these are actually true and there is a correlation between the two. And talking about this, I'm reminded of a very profound and beautiful example which one of our professors had given to us about this concept of doership and God being the doer. He was of course from the Department of Mathematics, and he was giving this example of a system, a computer system has a hardware which we all know, you know, there is a monitor, there is the hard disk, there is the motherboard and your keyboard and mouse and all of that which forms the hardware. And then you have a software which is the operating system, right? Which is coded and which makes the system function. So he was saying that the hardware is somewhat similar to the human body and the software can be compared to the human mind. And he was giving this example that, you know, you could have the best hardware. You could have, a high capacity hard disk. You could have a very, very well circuited motherboard. And you could have the highest, processor which is clocking a very high speed, all of this. But if you don't have a software or an operating system which can make use of this and deliver your results, there is no point of the hardware. And he said that's where the software becomes important, and that's where in the human being the mind or the intelligence becomes very important. You could have a very fine and healthy body, but it's the mind which uses the body to do action. And even it's even the other way around. You could have the best coded software, but if you don't have a hardware to implement what the software can do, then it's of no use. But then he went on to say, but both of this, hardware and software, owes its working to the power source, right? It's the power which animates the hardware, which gives life to the software. And it is when the power animates the hardware and the software, any problem can be solved by the system. And he said, that power which powers up the computer system is the same power which probably powers up your fan, your air conditioner, your light. It powers things from the faintest LED bulb to the most powerful, the halogen bulb or whatever it is. But it's the current which powers this software and the hardware is universal. And he said that power is actually similar to the power of divinity which is animating us. And he said when you say that Swami is the doer, essentially what we're meaning is, yes, you have a hardware, which is the human body. Yes, you have the operating system or the software, which is the human mind. But both of these are animated by the power source, which is making this body do, making this mind think. So in that sense, everything done by this body and mind is actually being done by that power. And he said, that is how Swami is really the doer of all our actions. So what is important is a concept which probably I will not go much into because that will again take us away from the answer itself, the answer specific to the question for today. But imagine that you have this system here, which I said about the hardware and the software. Imagine a sense of individuality is injected into the system. There is the sense of I am existent, right? What you call the ahankara or the sense of ego is injected into the system. Now this concept of I am can attach itself either to the hardware and say that I am the hardware, or it can attach itself to the software and say I am the software. In other words, in the human being, when this sense of individuality is injected, it can either say that I am the body, or it can say I am the mind. Or in the case of most of us, it is actually a combination of these two. We believe that we are the body as well as the mind. It's a combination, what we call the mind-body complex. And for different people, the percentage of the body consciousness, what you think, how much you think that you are the body, is different for different people. Now, what the spiritual journey is all about can be defined as detaching this I am from the body and from the mind and attaching it to the power that animates the system. From saying that I am the body and I am the mind, from I am the body-mind complex, can we come to the point where we say that I am the divinity which is animating this body and mind? I recall a very beautiful incident which one of the devotees once shared. There was this person in the interview room, and Swami had told him that if you want to ask any questions, go ahead and ask. So this person asked a question that, Swami, in your discourses you say that, Swami, I am divine and so are you. You all are divinity and incarnate. He said, Swami, I'm not able to relate to that. You know, I see myself as this human being who's making mistakes all the time, who is limited by the limitations of body. But Swami is saying that I'm divine. I'm not able to relate to that. So in trying to answer that person, Swami looked around and Swami looked at the various lights in the interview room, and Swami said, look at all these lights. And if you go out into the hall, you have these many chandeliers which have many, many bulbs in it. So Swami said, there are many bulbs and the bulbs' brightness varies according to their wattage or voltage, whatever it is. And he said that right now, each one of you think that you are the bulb, right? Swami said, all that I'm saying is, you're not the bulb, but you're the power that animates this bulb, the power that actually enlightens this bulb. That is all the difference that needs to be taken. So in that sense, we're all like that computer which has a hardware and a software and a power source. With this feeling of I am, or individuality, or ahankara, whatever you call it, injected into the system. So now this I am has to be detached from the hardware and the software and has to assert itself as being I am the power, or I am the divinity which animates this body-mind complex. So that's the whole spiritual journey. So what does it got to do with effort? When you say that Swami sees the effort and not the end result, it is very, very true. And one of the reasons why that is true is, based on this example which I gave you, one of the ways, or one of the best ways to be able to detach yourself from the body and the mind and to attach yourself to this divinity is through what Swami says, dharma, or doing actions which are pertaining to your current status and situation in life. Whatever is your role and whatever is your duty, if we are able to do that to our best possible, and if we, as Swami says, do it without having any eye on the result, whether the result is good or bad, whether we see success at the end of it or we see failure at the end of it, if we can do our action in the present to perfection without worrying about the results in the future, that act is in itself sufficient to enable you to detach yourself from the body and the mind and attach yourself to the power source. And because that action is so powerful, it has the ability to take you through this journey which spirituality is all about, Swami emphasizes you to do that action. And that is why when Swami looks at it, Swami looks at the effort being far, far more important than the end result. Because this is the whole idea. If we are able to do the present action with perfection and we are able to stick to it without worrying about what the results would be, automatically it leads you through this process. Well, that's one of the reasons. The other thing which, the reason why I feel Swami gives more importance to the effort rather than the result is, for Swami, the result is nothing. You know, if he wishes, he can make a success into a failure into a success. For him, it doesn't matter, right? The end result does not matter at all. For Swami, what matters is the effort. As I said, that effort purifies us. Action or karma purifies us and leads us on the spiritual journey. And that is why Swami gives importance to the effort. And the other thing is, when you talk about success, when you talk about we putting an effort over a period of time and success coming at the end of it, that success depends on many, many things more than just our effort. Our effort constitutes a very small fraction of that success which we see, or the defeat which we see at the end of it. For instance, even the same example that you gave about you preparing for a presentation with your team, there's the effort of so many other people involved. And what is the relevance of success or failure of the whole project? From Swami's point of view, what benefits the entire system? Is it good for this particular presentation to fail or to succeed? How good is success for the people involved? Is success a better teacher for the people involved, or failure a better teacher for the people involved? All of these matter when you talk about success and failure of the effort which you put over a period of time. So when you talk about success or failure, the effort that you put in plays a very, very small role in the larger picture. But nevertheless, you have to do the effort with utmost diligence, because that is what involves your part of your work, right? And for Swami's point of view, the success and failure is a much larger picture than just one person's effort. So the first thing is, as I said, don't credit yourself too much for the end result. Don't blame yourself too much for the failure of the effort too. Because both of these actually strengthen your ego. When you say that I did everything right and I was successful, or I did something wrong and so it was a failure, that thought is actually strengthening this feeling of I am the body and I am the mind, which is the first thing which is the basic thing which you're trying to battle against, right? So to start with, don't credit yourself or don't blame yourself too much for the success or failure. But there is a caveat to that. I'll come to that later. And the second thing is this thought of reminding yourself that I am not the doer, right? Because whether we want it or not, whether our efforts are sufficient or not, we are bound to see success as much as we see failure, right? And Swami says, life is a mix of success and failure. So just as we see failure, we are bound to see success. So it is very important for us to try to protect ourselves from this ego. And that is why Swami tells us that we keep reminding ourselves that, you know, we are not the doer. Because going back to the example of the computer, you could have the best hardware, right? You could have the latest technology in the hardware, in the best hard disk, the best processor, and the most advanced mouse and computer and all of that. And similarly, you could have the best operating system, whatever is the operating system which is doing really well today, the Apple OS or the latest Windows or the Linux or whatever it is. You could have the best of both. But both of these cannot function if that power is not animating the hardware and software. So we have to constantly remind ourselves that we are not the doer, because that enables us in this process of detaching this individuality from the body and the mind, and which will eventually attach itself to the divine principle which animates the system. Right? So it is not wrong to remind ourselves constantly that we are not the doer. But at the same time, as I said, this is where the effort part comes into play. Now, coming back to the point of, you know, when there is a failure, what do you do about that failure? Do you, you know, practically speaking, do you just, as you said, are we supposed to just say that everything is God's will? Yes, success or failure eventually is Swami's plan. But it is practically right to look at failure when it happens and go back and review our effort. Because most often, I can say this with a bit of confidence, with my own experience, our effort is always never 100%. Almost always, there is something lacking in our effort. And when there is success at the end of our effort, we don't review our effort. It is only when there is a failure, we learn to review our effort. So that is why Swami says, adversities are your best friends, because that is, adversities make you go back to your effort and review your effort and do it better. And as I said in the beginning, doing your effort right is the way to progress spiritually. So in that sense, whenever there is a failure, don't overlook it completely. At the same time, don't be too bothered about it. As I said, you're too small to be the only reason for the failure. But at the same time, use that adversity to review your present. That's absolutely the right thing to do. That's absolutely the practical thing to do. Now, as I said, I'd made a few points in answer to Sister Shruti's question on 2nd February, and I'll make a few quick references to that. I spoke about the effort which you do and, you know, placing your, giving more importance to the effort than the result. The effort which we put in is a very, very small component in playing a role in that success. For example, you know, when we used to be students of Swami, and we would very, very desperately want Swami to speak to us, or Swami to call us for an interview, or whatever it is. And in our own small understanding, we would do a little, you know, what you call sadhana or tapas, or whatever you want to call that, penance, in trying to attract Swami's attention. Some of the boys would keep Maunam for days together. Some of them would, do a Satcharitra Parayanam continuously. I know some students who have done it for an entire year, 7 days after 7 days after 7 days. And many such things, you know, some would get up early in the morning and go and clean the toilets in the bathroom. They will feel that Swami will be happy with that. But one thing which I used to think about is, you know, none of these efforts are actually really worthy enough to draw the grace of Swami directly. Because here is Swami, he is all said and done, you know, he is our mother and father, all said and done. But he is also the avatar of the age, right? I mean, to get even one word from him calls for hundreds and hundreds of years of tapas and pining. But when we juxtapose our small efforts, like doing these things which I just mentioned, and at the end of 1 week or 1 month or 1 year, if Swami comes and speaks to you, because we are giving so much importance to the outcome of our efforts, we think that it is this effort which has led to that outcome, right? And when we make this connection in our mind, every time we start doing effort, we will place all our happiness on the outcome. And we will also be reviewing our effort on the basis of the outcome. And that becomes a very, very big stumbling block in us doing the effort correctly and also in being happy. So as I mentioned to Sister Shruti in that answer, what we all have to do consciously is draw our reviewing of our effort from the success or failure and place it on this self-satisfaction that you feel when you do an effort. When you go through presentation which you just gave as an example, when you're preparing for that presentation, at some point you will have to stop and review that effort that you've put in. But don't place the review of your effort or your judgment of whether your effort was complete or incomplete on how the outcome finally pans out to be. Because that would be a wrong way of ascertaining whether your effort is perfect or not. Place this measurement of your effort on the self-satisfaction that you feel within. I think this is a graduation which all of us have to do. Because as I said, you know, the only thing which is within our control is that effort. Once you have done our effort and you've set the ball rolling, there are hundreds of forces working on it. There are hundreds of things which Swami sees which you don't see. And there might be many, many reasons why that should be a success or a failure. And we've seen this many times, you know, when you're doing presentations in front of Swami, when you're doing these programs in the Sai Kulwant Hall, there would be so many things amiss. There would be so many things which we would overlook. But on that day, everything will fall in place and it will be a success. Probably to an extent, it was a reward for the little bit of effort which was put in. The other thing could be that that presentation being good that day was probably essential for the people sitting there and seeing the program. There was something they were supposed to learn from it. So maybe Swami is making it a success so that overall somebody benefits there in the crowd. It need not necessarily be because of our effort. So when we turn this assessment of our effort based on our self-satisfaction, at the end of it, whether the program is a success or not, whether your presentation has been received well or not, you will go back home and say that, am I satisfied with the effort that I put in? If you are satisfied, then you will say that, yes, I put my effort and I'm happy about it. Doesn't matter how the result is. But if you're unsatisfied, everybody might come and applaud you, but you will know that I'm not satisfied with what I did. The next time I need to work harder. So this graduation from reviewing our effort on the basis of success or failure to reviewing our effort purely based on our self-satisfaction is something we need to all learn. And I can think of many, many incidents. Two which come to my mind right on top of my mind is I recall some of my classmates when they were in Kodaikanal. Swami asked them to put up a music program, and I think it was during the first or second day of the visit. And all of these boys, first time they're going to Kodaikanal, and you know what happens when your water changes, when the weather changes, all their voices were not in their prime. And when they eventually made that presentation, the program was quite bad. They all sang pretty badly. But Swami, out of his love, you know, after the program was over, Swami spoke very praisingly of the boys. Swami called them and blessed them. And for the crowd, you know, when they're seeing this, if they see Swami happy, they feel the program is good. So everybody was happy about the program. But the boys who were involved in the program knew that they had not given their best. So when Swami was getting up and going back into his residence, one of these boys went up to Swami and said, Swami, are you happy with the program? And even when he was asking this, he knew that the program was not good, right? So Swami looked back at him, and Swami with a very stern face, till then Swami was smiling and, you know, applauding the boys with the crowd. Swami turned to him and Swami said, are you satisfied? And this boy was taken aback when Swami asked this. And Swami looked deep into him and Swami said, if you are satisfied, then remember, Swami is satisfied, right? And I remember this friend of mine telling me that's really the mantra for life for him, and it's really the mantra for life for all of us. Because any time when we put our effort, can we change our attitude and say that I will see if my effort is good or not based on whether I am having this inner self-satisfaction. And another very beautiful incident that I recall is the elders who handle the PA system in the mandir, they've been doing it for the past 30, 40 years or so. And they would religiously set up the mic every time Swami was going to speak. And you would have all seen that elderly gentleman who used to come and adjust the mic for Swami. He has many, many such incidents. And he was telling one of which he was narrating to us was, once he had set up the mic for Swami, and Swami was supposed to give a discourse, and Swami spoke for 1.5 hours, and everybody was happy. And after the session was over, they were winding up, right? They were rolling up the wires and putting away the mics. And when they rolled a carpet under which the wires usually run through, they realized that the wire was actually disconnected. And in their hurry, they had forgotten to check that, right? That was their duty. They were supposed to do that as diligently as possible. And after Swami has given his discourse, the mic has worked perfectly. The PA system has been working as it always does. But when they are winding up, they see that actually the mic was not connected at all, right? So just imagine this situation. It's a beautiful miracle, right? On one hand, this person takes away the message that he's not the doer. Swami is the doer and he's just an instrument. He's been given an opportunity to be there. That is one message he takes away. And the other thing is, the end of the day, the event was a success. But he cannot lay claim to the success. Swami made the event a success because it was the right thing to happen. So many devotees were there. They were all happy to listen to Swami's voice. And it probably Swami saved him from the embarrassment which he would have faced. But that person will know that today I've done a mistake. I mean, he wouldn't say the next time I'll leave the mic open and I'll let Swami perform a miracle. He will say that next time when I do the effort, I need to be very, very careful. And that should exactly be our approach to life. Whatever we do, it may be successful, it may be a failure. Actually speaking, that success or failure has very little to do with our efforts. But how well we do the effort and how satisfied we are with the effort that we do, that is completely in our grasp. And that is why Swami gives more importance to the effort and not to the outcome. And that is why, even though we are not the doer, it is the power, the divine power which Swami is, which is in us, which is animating our thoughts and our actions. Still, we are responsible for the effort. And in doing the effort diligently, you are going to go through this process of detaching yourself from the body and the mind and attaching this individuality or this I am principle to the divinity which is within you. And this is the journey which happens. So that's what I thought I'll tell you in reply to that question, probably quickly to summarize whatever I said. Yes, Swami does see the effort and gives more importance to the effort than the result, because the result is in Swami's hand. Today it can be a success and overnight Swami can make it a failure, or the other way. You know, what is a failure? Overnight Swami can make it a success. So it's all in His hand. But Swami is giving us the role to play. Swami is letting us put the effort that we need to put, and our diligence and our journey in spirituality depends on how well we perform this effort. And that is why from Swami's point of view, he looks at the effort and not the end result. And one way of doing this is, yes, use this tool that I am not the doer to protect yourself from this pride which comes with success. Most of us, I can say this with a fair bit of confidence, that all of us have tasted success which we don't deserve. But if we take too much of that to our head, and that is only going to take us away from this feeling that I am divine. So if for that reason, it is very good for us to remind ourselves that we are not the doer. But at the same time, learn this art of reviewing our effort based on our self-satisfaction and detaching it from whether the effort leads to success or failure. I hope that answers the question that you're asking. Of course, that last point which you made, I didn't make a reference to. Are we trying to, let me try to get those exact words. The thing that you asked was, are we trying to console or cover up saying that Lord has willed it and this is His sankalpa? Is that not our learning? Well, all I can say for that is probably the nature of philosophy or spiritual wisdom. It can be misused, right? That is why we have this phrase called convenient philosophy. There is always this danger of taking spiritual concepts and using it to justify our actions. There is a danger, that is a pitfall in the spiritual path. The only thing I can say about that is why the spiritual path is an individual journey. And it all depends on honesty. And honesty not to the people around you, but the honesty to yourself. at the end of the day, you should be able to say that, yes, this is wrong which I did, this was right which I did, and be very, very objective about that, be very, very honest about that, right? So in a group, somebody might come and console you, you might go and console somebody, but at the end of the day, when you're talking about the spiritual journey, and you're talking about karma, dharmic karma, you alone are the one who have to review it, and you alone are the one who's got to give yourself points for it, right? So you should guard yourself away from this kind of convenient philosophy. But I'm not saying that in this occasion it was a case of convenient philosophy. That again, you're the best person to judge that. But in the spiritual path, yes, we all have to be aware and conscious of this pitfall. So thank you, Sister Sanju, for that question. If you have anything more to ask on the basis of what I said, you can, you're welcome to write to me, and you know that you can mail me at prem@radiosai.org. So that, dear listeners, was the question for this week. But as I promised you, I'd like to read out for you a very, very beautiful incident. And if you are a regular listener of Radio Sai, if you are a regular reader of Swami's literature, this incident is not going to be new for you. But nevertheless, it's a beautiful incident, and I'm going to read out this for you. The reason why, I mean, I don't hesitate to read out incidents which are very, very common is, as Swami had told beautifully in an discourse, he said, for keeping your body clean, you use water. To keep your mind clean, you use truth. You use sat. That's what Swami said. And it is in satsang, when we constantly recapitulate and remind ourselves of these beautiful incidents in Swami's life, in the life of Swami's devotees, it is then when our mind gets clarified, the mind gets purified through these stories. And that is why, how many ever times we read them, I think it's worth listening over and over again. The incident I'm going to read today is about a very ardent devotee of Swami. His name is Sri Burgula Ramakrishna Rao. And this is an excerpt from one of the most famous books, which has drawn many, many devotees to Swami. It's a book by Mr. Howard Muffett, the book Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. As I said, it's a incident about late Sri Burgula Ramakrishna Rao, who is the chief minister of the erstwhile Hyderabad state and the late governor of the Uttar Pradesh and Kerala. He was later the governor of Uttar Pradesh and Kerala. And if you recall that it was when he was the governor of UP, Swami made that trip to Badrinath in the 1960s, 63 or 64, if I'm not wrong. So here is the excerpt from the book Man of Miracles. In 1961, when Dr. Ramakrishna Rao was governor of Uttar Pradesh, his wife and he were traveling by fast train from Bareilly to Nainital in the Himalayas. They were the only occupants of their first-class carriage, and the train had no corridor by which anyone could enter or leave the compartment. At about 11 p.m., the governor noticed some sparks coming from the electric fan. These rapidly increasing in number until he and his wife grew quite alarmed, thinking the compartment would catch fire any minute. He looked for a cord or a bell by which he could sound the alarm and stop the train, but could find none. It began to look as if the governor and his lady might be burned to death before anyone learned of their plight. There was nothing they could do but pray, which they did wholeheartedly. Then there was a knock on one of the outer doors. Very surprising this was, because the doors simply led to the open air through which the train was roaring at a good speed. Dr. Rao walked over and opened the door. In from the dark night stepped a man dressed in the khaki uniform of an electric wireman. Without a word, this man went to work on the faulty fan from which the sparks were now flying, like chaff from a threshing floor. About a quarter of an hour later, the electrician said to them, "There is no danger now. You can go to bed and sleep." With this, he sat down on the floor near the door. The governor's wife lay down on her bed and closed her eyes, but she kept half opening them to watch the man by the door, because, as she told her husband later, she thought that anyone who risked his life to walk along the running board of a fast-moving train was probably a burglar who, when they were both asleep, would rob them. The governor himself, with no such suspicions, was deeply engrossed in a book. Suddenly, he was startled to feel the touch of the workman's hand and hear his voice asking quietly if the doctor would mind closing the carriage door after him, because he was now leaving. The little doctor was astonished that the electrician did not wait until the next station before leaving. But before he could say anything, the khaki-clad figure had opened the door and the night air was whistling into the carriage. Dr. Ramakrishna Rao jumped up and stepped to the open door in time to see the man stand a moment on the running board, then vanish into the darkness. It was all rather mystifying. How in the first place did he know that the fan was giving trouble? How did he get to the carriage, and why did he choose to leave and make his way along the running board of this swaying, fast-moving express when he could have easily waited until the next stop? He either liked living dangerously or he was simply crazy. But in either case, he must also be clairvoyant to know that the fault in the electric fan. With a mental shrug, the little doctor lay down to sleep. About a month later, after this incident, the governor was again traveling, this time by the aeroplane that was kept for his official use. With him on this occasion, besides his wife and the pilot, were his ADC, his personal assistant, and the pilot's wife. They were flying from Kanpur, the capital city of Uttar Pradesh, to Benares. Above Benares, the governor noticed that they seemed to be circling a very long time over the airfield before landing. He asked if there was anything amiss and was informed that the undercarriage was stuck. The wheels would not come down. Furthermore, they were now almost out of fuel. With Dr. Rao's agreement, the pilot decided to attempt a crash landing on the grass of the airfield. He signaled the ground to this effect. The fire engines were brought out and everything made ready for the attempt. All knew, of course, that it was a highly dangerous operation, and both the little doctor and his wife sent fervent prayers to their guru, Satyasai Baba, for his much-needed protection. Perhaps the ADC was praying too, for he also was a devotee of Sai Baba. Like the doctor, he wore on his hand a talisman, a ring that had been materialized by Baba. The pilot knew this and, as a last resort before trying a crash landing, asked the ADC to try his hand at working the lever for releasing the jammed undercarriage. The ADC placed his hand on the lever and pressed as directed. The undercarriage came down without any difficulty. They were able to make a normal landing. The next day, Mrs. Ramakrishna Rao, knowing that Baba was at Bangalore in the south, phoned him from Benares in order to thank him for his grace and protection, which she believed had saved them from their perilous predicament in the plane. She found, not at all to her surprise, that Swami knew all about the event and even mentioned details. Then Swami remarked, "But you have said nothing about the train incident." "What train incident, Swami?" she asked, for it had slipped completely from her mind. "Why? when the fan was almost on fire and you thought I was a thief. Baba laughed. Dr. Ramakrishna Rao was sure the train story could not have reached Baba in the ordinary way, because neither his wife nor he had talked to anyone about it. They had refrained from mentioning it on the following morning, not wanting to upset any of their staff. Then the incident had faded into the background of their busy lives. Nothing superhuman that Sai Baba did could ever surprise the little doctor. He had, through the years, seen and experienced so much. Well, that was a very, very beautiful incident. In the many years I've spent with Swami, I've heard this incident over and over again. And it just thrills you, the myriad ways in which Swami goes to the rescue of his devotees. As we always say it on the radio, probably Swami could have saved everybody even before they got into the situation. But Swami created situations. Swami scripted so many such leelas, probably so that somebody like me could be sitting here and talking about it, and all of you could listen to it and enjoy it. Hari Anant, Hari Katha Anant. And that is how beautiful it is to each time relate, remember and share Swami's beautiful incidents. With that, dear listeners, it's time for me to go. It's the next week at 11 a.m. I'll again join you with another question on the Radio Sai answering booth. Of course, in about 40 minutes from now, I'll join you for the afternoon satsang with Arvind. If you have any questions, especially on practical spirituality or applying Swami's message in your daily life, or if you have a problem and you're wondering what would be Swami's solution for that, as Swami has spoken about it, you can send me your questions. You can send them to me directly to my mail ID. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. The mails are directly to my mail ID and nobody other than me reads them. So if you want confidentiality, that's guaranteed. If you don't want me to mention your name when I play your question, I think that can be taken care of too. So with much humility and reverence, I offer this program at Swami's Lotus Feet. Do join me again next week in Radio Sai answering booth.
Thank you. మధురమురా ఆస్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా సాయి నామమే మధురమురా ఆస్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా పలు తలపులతో పరుగిడు వారికి ఫలితము శూన్యమురా సాయి నామమే మధురమురా ఆస్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా మానవులొకటేరా ఈ అంతరములు నీకెందుకురా అందరు మానవులొకటేరా ఈ అంతరములు నీకెందుకురా మానవ దేవే మాధవ దేవా మానవ స్మరణే మూర్తికి మార్గమురా కలిమి బలిమి అధికారాలు కనులకు వేయును పొరలు తెరలు కలిమి బలిమి అధికారాలు కనులకు వేయును పొరలు తెరలు జీవితమే ఒక దారణిరా జీవితమే ఒక దారణిరా నీవు నేనను భేదమేతరా సాయి నామమే మధురమురా ఆ స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా స్థాపించుటకై సాయి రాముడే అవతరించరా సత్యము ధర్మము స్థాపించుటకై సాయి రాముడే అవతరించరా ఈ పరమార్థము తెలిసిన నరుడే స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా పలు తలపులతో పలుగిడు వారికి ఫలితము శూన్యమురా సాయి నామమే మధురమురా ఆ స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా ఆ స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా ఆ స్మరణే ముక్తికి మార్గమురా
నవాజతా హై జో సబ్కో వో దిల్ నవాజ్ హై తూ నియాజ్మంద్ హై సబ్ ఔర్ భీ నిజాజ్ హై తూ జమానే భర కే బనాతా హై సారే బిగడే కామ్ కరీమ్ సారే జమానే కా కారసాజ్ హై తూ
కరమ కా క్యా కహనా ఇస్ శాన్ కరమ కా
क्या कहना,
दर पे जो सवाली आते हैं,
शानी करम का क्या कहना, दर पे जो सवाली आते हैं,
एक तेरी करीमे का सदका,
एक तेरी करीमे सदका,
वो मन की मुरादें पाते हैं,
तेरी करीने का सदका, वो मन की मुरादें पाते हैं,
शान करम का क्या कहना,
इस शान करम का क्या कहना,
खाली न रही रहमत से तेरी,
खाली न रही रहमत से तेरी,
दुख दर्द के मारों की झोली,
दुख दर्द के मारों की झोली,
क्या तेरा करम है दर पे तेरे,
क्या तेरा करम है दर पे तेरे,
भरती है हजारों की झोली,
शाने करम का क्या कहना, शाने कर्म का क्या कहना,
मुश्किल को तू आसान बना देता है,
मुश्किल को तू आसान बना देता है,
हर ऊंचे उम्मीद खिला देता है,
हर ऊंचे उम्मीद खिला देता है,
तकदीर से हो जाए जो भाई से जुदा, उस भाई को भाई से मिला देता है,
शाने कर्म का क्या कहना,
इस शाने कर्म का क्या कहना, करम की भीख उन्हें, सजावट क्या कहे,